Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Well, hello and welcome to Brokenomics. So here I am playing poker with my good friend Mark.
Good afternoon. Hello.
So Mark happened to be in the studio, and we were bonding as men do about their hobbies, and poker came up. Game we both quite enjoy. I used to play quite a lot of the live poker, although speaking to Mark, I came to realise how much of a fish I was when it came to the online game. So, Mark, you used to run a poker business, didn't you?
I did. So I was the managing director for a poker training site that I won't name, as I don't particularly want to be associated with it anymore. But, yes, I ran a poker training site. We took people, taught them how to play a mixture between cash and tournaments, did coaching and things like that. And I have a great love of the game. I've played it profitably for a little while and very happy.
Yes. Good. Well, we thought that we should... I've raised you, by the way. I thought we should do a Brokenomics on poker, because it's quite an interesting game. It's quite a history to it. As far as I know, we don't know exactly where it emerged from.
There's a variety of different games. Most of them have European origin, especially French, of all things, and then an English game called Brag.
Yes.
But modern poker, as we understand it, really emerged sort of in the late 20th century. So California in particular popularised limit hold'em, and then that developed into no limit hold'em, which people decided that they would enjoy a great deal more. And that's where we are today. Obviously, modern technology, cameras, things which show people hole cards and stuff like that makes it more of a spectator sport. And of course, huge jackpots with life-changing amounts of money always draw a crowd.
Yes, and you might think poker's just a game, but I mean, actually, we got a lot out of it. So that mid sort of West region, that central region America where poker really emerged. I mean, that was where the money was really made during that time. You got the Rockefellers and the Carnegies, and you get a whole bunch of other sort of wealthy individuals emerge from this. But it's not just that, and they're all poker players, but it's not just that. You also get the beginning of financialization. It emerges in the same region. So, for example, in Chicago, they've had a commodities and future exchange in Chicago for the last 180 years, whereas basically everywhere else didn't get that until the 1970s. So there is something to this game that makes you think about risk tolerance, uncertainty of information, understanding variance. There's a whole set of skills that actually lends itself to the development of the financial system. And that's why, perhaps why, you see the beginning of financialization in its most sophisticated form emerge alongside this game.
Well, much like poker, the financial markets and things like that, and the economy as a concept is another game with incomplete information that's quite opaque. Poker's just a lot more transparent. It's a lot simpler, obviously, than a working, fully functional national economy or even a smaller scale economy. But a lot of the lessons that can be drawn from it are similar, certainly when it comes to investing and investment markets.
I'm raising 500 here, by the way.
I am folding.
Nice.
You can take this one.
Flopped a flush.
You flopped a flush. What people don't see is that before this, we ran a few test hands, and every single one, Dan got a flush against me. So I'm pretty sure that at some point you've learned to rig the deck.
You got to deal from the bottom. It's an interesting point, actually, about sort of big hands, because the popular conception of poker, they probably get from, watching films. You watch Casino Royale, for example, and the final hand, it's ridiculous, isn't it? It's like Royal Flush versus Quads and...
Oh, I believe it's two full houses of flush versus a straight flush, which is...
astronomical chances.
Deeply, deeply unlikely. we talk about, you know, straight flushes and things. We're talking orders of magnitude, you know, hundreds of thousands to one, basically, to have that situation. And then to have that situation come up against other rare hands, even rarer.
Yes.
So it's, yeah.
So for viewers who aren't that familiar with the game, what game are we playing here?
So we're playing No Limit Hold'em. There are various other types of poker, five card draw, pineapple, Pot Limit Omaha is probably the second most popular after No Limit Hold'em. That's with four cards, but it could be five cards or six cards. But No Limit Hold'em's the most popular one. That's the one everybody thinks about. That's the one all the films are sort of placed around.
Well, apart from Maverick, that one with Mel Gibson where he was on a steamboat, they were still playing the five card stud, I think, then.
Five card draw, yes.
Yeah, five card draw. That fell out of popularity because obviously if every player has five cards, it's quite an upper limit on to how many players you can have in the game. Whereas Hold'em, everybody's only got two hold cards, so you can fit a lot more players in the game.
I've already raised you.
Yeah, take it. Actually, you want my small blind only?
I'll take your small blind. Thank you very much.
Yeah, okay. So take us through. In fact, we got the camera set up on the desk. So just talk us through how this game is played. You've got a stack of cash. I've got a stack of cash. What happens then?
Well, in order for the game to be played, there needs to be some money in the pot. For however many people that are playing, you want to be playing after some money. And so we have a system called the blinds. There's a small blind, which in this case would be 50 Monopoly bucks, and a big blind, which is twice the small blind, and that's 100 Monopoly bucks. In a game where there are more than just the two of us as well, there's a button that moves around behind the small and the big blind that tells people where the blinds should be. And that's how you ensure that there's always some money in the pot to be won. At this point, every player is given two cards.
Right.
And at this point, we get to look at them.
So let's do this poker TV style. That's what I've got. So.
And that's what I've got. You tell me if it's better than what Dan's got in the comments.
Yep.
At which point we make a decision. Who's going to bet and how much? As a small blind, I act first. So I say, I'm making this 200 to play.
So then I have to look at my hand and think, oh, do I want to exit out here and forfeit my 100? Or do I want to play on? Well, as the audience knows, I definitely want to play on at this point. So I'm going to match your bet.
At this point, this money goes to the side, and it's called the pot.
Yeah.
We burn a card, and then we put down the flop, the first of three streets with three cards. At this point, we get to choose whether or not we're going to check or bet, and I'm going to choose to check.
All right, keep it interesting, I'll check as well.
At this point, we burn another card, and the turn comes.
Blimey, this is getting exciting,
isn't
it?
She's a queen. Lots of big picture cards here.
Yes.
And then the decisions are made again. I will check once more.
All right, then I'll check.
And finally, we reach the river. The final card has been burned, and our final card comes down, which in this case is the eight of hearts. And a decision can now be made, a final round of betting. So I say, 100, sir, if you want to play. And you have a choice to call that bet, or to raise or to fold.
I don't know, maybe I should raise, but I get this sneaking suspicion that my ace high might be good. So I'm going to match your bet and I'm going to find out.
So Dan here has ace deuce. Now at showdown, I have pocket sixes that I was dealt. So I win this pot. And
you slow rolled that one.
All this money comes to me. I have third pair on the flop, sir. It's not that dramatic.
Yeah, right. Okay. Yeah, so that point about films, the way that films show it, they always show a massive hand inflation on stuff they get. Actually, the mark of a good player is somebody who's able to make a call with a weak hand. So the example I'm thinking of is Stu Unger. I think it was in 1991. He won the World Series of Poker with a 10 high. You know, he pushed all in with that hand. And there were numerous examples of this. It's always the most dramatic hands amongst actual players is not people who won with, you know, quad aces or something. Of course you're going to win with quad aces. It's people who win with garbage.
Well, just to correct you there, he didn't move all in, but he did call an all in with 10 high. And his opponent happened to have 5 high at the time. four or five suited, I believe. But yes, these sort of moments where the money is made is in playing hands better than your opponent, and less to do with necessarily the direct odds, although the direct odds do matter. But to give you an example, everybody knows pocket aces. Pocket aces are the strongest preflop hand in poker, and then the second strongest preflop hand is kings. And usually, in a showdown versus aces and kings, all of the money in No Limit Hold'em will go into the pot, or a large amount of it, before any of the community cards have come down. And over the course of many, many iterations and all of the hands that you're going to play over your lifetime as a poker player, you're going to have roughly the same number of aces and kings as the next guy. So, in a sense, aces versus kings is a non-hand, because you're going to lose as many times as you're going to win, and you're going to basically end up with the same statistical distribution.
That was the thing you said this morning that really made me think, because, you know, you always remember those dramatic hands where you got, like, aces, you know, pocket aces at the beginning of the game. But as you say, yeah, it's kind of predetermined if you get a really strong starting hand like that, because the money's going in the pot.
Well, you'd hope so. But there are situations where, of course, if I have pocket aces and you have a hand like pocket fives, if I try and shove all the money in your face before preflop, you're going to go, he's got pocket aces, and then fold, you know. Making the decisions by reading what your opponent is saying. And in a live setting, that can come down to a number of things. That's not just what the bet size is, but it's your opponent's mannerisms. It's your experience of how they've played throughout the rest of the game. Poker players pay a lot of attention to the hands they're not in. Most of the time in poker, you're folding. You're folding maybe two-thirds of the time, three-quarters of the time, depending on how loose you are. So the reality is that you need to be paying attention to what your opponents are doing, even if you're not playing, so that you can understand them. And once you have a good read on someone and you understand the range of hands that they play in this particular way, you can make decisions that hopefully are to your benefit.
Yes. So, I mean, let's finish this hand, and then we give a basic example. So what do you want to do? What do you want to do here? You calling my bet?
Sure. I'll make it. I'll call the bet.
Right. I will. I'm going to raise it another 100.
For the sake of the show and for entertainment value, I will call you here, and I'm really hoping for a particular scenario. All right. Action's on you, sir.
I'm going to put the 500 in. I think this is getting spicy.
Absolutely spicy. Why not? I'll call for the sake of things. For anyone who's marginally familiar with poker, this is an enormous bet that Dan has just made that I've just called with almost no hesitation. But for the sake of entertainment, we'll carry on.
I'm going to back off here. I'm just going to check, see what you do.
All right. Well, we'll check as well.
All right. Well, I mean, that's a lively board, isn't it?
There we go.
Having backed off, I'm now going to come back with a 750 bet.
750.
This is going to break me if this goes wrong.
Marvellous. Well, I'm very happy with that, and right. I'm going to raise all in.
Oh, sod it. Oh dear, this has gone wrong, isn't it? I kind of think my queens aren't good here.
Yeah, kind of would be the reasoning, wouldn't it?
Yeah. So I'm gonna let you take it. I'm folding.
Fabulous. Well, you've given me a wonderful example to prove that bluffing does work. I have pocket twos counterfeited on the river by the three. And there we are. But I have all of the money.
Right, okay.
But thanks for that extra 750. I think I'm quite happily in the black
now. Oh dear, that's awful, isn't it? Because you showed hesitation at the beginning. You could have easily been representing sort of suited connectors, and one of those could have been like a six or an eight or something. And oh well, never mind. Let's get to the first sort of example that I wanted to get to. In fact, we got yours, which is ducks.
Yes. For people who don't know, every single hand in poker has its own particular kind of slang. Deuces or twos are called ducks.
So what do we think about these two hands at the beginning?
Okay. In terms of absolute hand strength, every pair is better than any suited hand. However, when we're thinking about the way hands interact, so for example here, pocket twos, if with nothing else we put all of our money in the middle every single time, then 50 point something percent of the time I'm going to win with my pocket twos.
Yes.
Another smaller percentage of the time you're going to we're going to tie, and then 49% of the time pocket kings, ace king here is going to win. It's basically as close to a flip, which is what we call a 50-50, as possible. However, when we think about what's called implied odds, ace king here, which in this case is suited, has the opportunity to make a flush. It has the opportunity to make a straight. And of course, aside from its top pair and second top pair holdings. So realistically, ace king is going to overrealize its equity versus a hand like pocket deuces, which will be forced on future streets to fold, assuming a normal rate of play. So that's why people play ace king, and they're not just exclusively playing pairs, because ace king has higher potential, whereas pocket twos, don't get me wrong, as a pair it's already strong, but it can be counterfeited. As we saw in the last hand there, the board came down with one pair on it and then a pair of eights and a pair of threes, which counterfeits the twos, so they don't play. And at the same time, they can make strong hands, but they're reliant on hitting a fewer number of cards. So if we hit another duck, another two, we have a set of twos. We could hit two of them. We could have quad twos. But realistically, that's not going to happen very often.
So let's use this as an example of, you know, because there's this whole thing: is poker gambling or is it maths? And I'll make a case as to why it's maths, and I'll keep it basic, and then you can disabuse us of this if you want to get into the complications afterwards. But we've got this situation, and like you said, it's effectively a coin flip. But it's not actually a coin flip because you've got 53% and I've got 47%. So let's, is that way around? Yeah, so 47%. So let's break into where that is. So why that is because you're actually winning, but I've got another six cards in the hand, in the deck, that are going to help improve my position and put me in a stronger position. I've given myself suited, but ignore that. So flop comes. So actually, I know. So let's do the masters. Okay, so a 52 card deck.
Yes,
I already know two of them. So there were 50 cards that are unknown to me, and I'm looking for six of them. So I'm looking for six out of 50. So any one particular card gives me 12%. However, the flop is not one card; it's three cards, and it's not. It's a dependent odds rather than independent odds, because they're all coming out at the same time. So if you want to do the maths on that, it's actually you've got to calculate out 6 over 50 times 6 over 49 times 6 over 48. You multiply that out, and that gives me 22% chance. So I've got a 22% chance of getting to where I need to get to on the flop. So flop comes out. Oh dear, that's not what I was looking for. But we got the turn. Now I'm looking for 6 out of 46.
You say that, but it's actually 6 out of 44, because you know that I've got two cards.
Well, no, because your cards are unknown to me.
Very true.
Yes. So I'm looking for the unknown variables. So I've got 12% chance of getting it on the next card, and then it goes down to 6 out of 45, meaning that I've got a 13% chance on the river. So you add those up, the 22%, the 12% and the 13%, and that's my 47% chance of getting there in the end. So a very simplified example of why you can look at this as a maths game, as a maths exercise, and it implies that there is at least a mathematically perfect way of playing the game, albeit we've given ourselves a fairly simple example. So I'll then go on to talk about expected value and stuff, and then you'll explain this much better in a more complicated environment. Next card comes down, it's an ace.
Yep, you're so absolutely nailing me. I have two outs.
I've hit one of my outs. So let's say in this particular scenario, there's oh, you've got all the money now. So
yeah, you gave me all of your money.
Yes, well that is true. Let's say there's 300 in the pot. Now it's turned around a bit for you because you've only got two cards that are going to help you. So you're doing, was it two? Are we down to
two out of 45?
Two out of 45. So 2 out of 45. So you've got 4.5% chance of winning. So this is where the expected value comes in. If I make a bet against that 300 pot, because you're only going to win 4.5%. In fact, let's make it easier. Let's stick 1,000 in the middle. If I'm going to make a bet now,
yes,
because you've only got 4.5% chance of winning, you don't want to call any bet higher than 45 Monopoly bucks.
That would be my direct odds, yeah.
Yes. However, then we got the implied expected value, because you could look at me and see how much I've got set there behind. And let's just say, I'll give myself some more money to... There we go.
To illustrate your point.
I've got several thousand here behind. You might now look at it and think, well, I've only got 4.5% chance of winning 1,000 Monopoly bucks, and therefore I don't want to put in any more than 45 Monopoly bucks. But if you look at the rest of it, and you're pretty sure that your read is that I've got aces.
Not that my read is that you've got aces, otherwise I'm completely dead. But if my read is that you have an ace...
Yes,
a strong ace.
Yes.
And that you are the kind of person to be particularly sticky with that ace, as in you're not going anywhere. And if my deuce flies off on the river and you bet big again and I can just put all the money in there and you won't be able to get away from it, then I'm making way more money.
So all of a sudden you're looking at my entire stack over here and you're thinking, well, let's say I bet 200 here for whatever reason. You're thinking, okay, well, straight up 4.5% isn't worth 200, but I'm looking at the several thousand that he's got behind me. So now actually it's 4.5% of 5,000. Well, now you're perfectly willing to pay 200.
Indeed.
Just in case you get your duck, and there we go, quack, quack, up it turns. So that's my butchered, oversimplified explanation of... expected value and implied value, but why don't you do a better version of that for me?
I mean, expected value is this idea that's linked to equity. So expected value is the average value of your hand over the course of the played hand. Now, it's important to note as well that because of the nature of the game, and the number of different iterations that there are, essentially every hand is unique. And your opponents are certainly almost always going to be unique, unless you play against the same person every single day of the week. So there are multiple different factors coming in, and this is what makes it a dangerous game, a difficult game, and the luck element means that you can get absurdly lucky, such as hitting a deuce on the river when you absolutely should not be there. Or if, in that case, a bad beat is good for a whale player, a bad player, but they've got too much money, because occasionally they win. And that's good for professionals because the professionals...
It keeps the whales interested.
Yes, and the professionals can milk that player for longer. So you have this idea of EV. Now, across each street, your EV changes. And your EV, there's certain decisions you can make because you always have a choice on every street. You can either, assuming you've got the chips there, you can raise, you can call, you can or bet in the case of if you're first to act, or you can fold. And the EV of folding is always zero. But if you're making these other decisions, there are other calculations that go into it. So if we're bluffing, we have percentages that we go through in order to do it. So if I bluff for 100% of the pot, then I have to win a third of the time, for for example. And if my opponent is bluffing into me and they bet 100% of the pot, I have to win a quarter of the time to make that make sense in terms of raw EV. But as we've mentioned, there's also this concept of implied odds. And implied odds is, what are my odds that if I make my very strong hand, I can get paid on a future street? Because all bets in poker are exponential. The more money that goes in the earlier on in the game, or the earlier on in the hand, the more that that pot will be on the river, because you're always betting in terms of the pot.
It's always cumulative, yes.
Yeah, so you're always betting in terms of the pot. So if I, if we have our game of 50-100, and so the pot on the flop is only 200, and we start betting, you know, we're thinking about that 200. We're betting in terms of that. And professionals have certain conventions that they do. A third pot size bet is quite common, for instance, on the flop at the moment. That's changed over time. It used to be close to half. Sometimes the opening sizes change, but generally there are conventions within the space. So a one-third pot bet size would be typical, in which case the pot on the turn is only sort of 322, and then it kind of goes from there. Whereas if we raise pre-flop, that is, then the size of the pot might be 500 when we reach the flop, in which case, instead of betting 66, I'm betting 200, you know, into the size. And that's an enormous difference in changing values. So that inflates the size of the pot. So when you have, in a very basic sense, when you have strong hands, you want to bet big. And when you have weak hands, you want to bet small.
Yes. So what about my idea here that I just work through a maths example as to how you can work it out. I'm kind of implying that there is a way of playing the game which is mathematically correct.
To watch the full video, please become a premium member at lotuseaters.com.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.